Welcome to Giving an Answer, the show dedicated to defending the historic Christian faith. I am your host, H.C. Felder, and today the topic is From Brokenness to Wholeness, the personal testimony of William Blackshear. And as my guest, you may have figured out, my guest is named William Blackshear. And just let me tell you a little bit about the purpose of the show. Is that this is a show that's doing a testimony, but I know this is an apologetic show, which is dealing with the evidences for the faith. To me, one of the best evidences for the faith is the personal testimony of someone, is the transformation in the life of someone who has come to know Jesus Christ. And that is exactly what I'm doing today. I'm proving that God exists through the testimony of William Blackshear. And William Blackshear is also the founder of Project Restoration. And that's pretty much what it. Welcome to the show.
Welcome.
Did I leave anything out?
No. No, you didn't. Everything is... what you say. Also, Project Restoration also has another component called Restoration Consultant.
Okay. Yes. Well, tell us a little bit about Project Restoration.
Project Restoration is just a organization that help kids who have suffered from abuse to now bring them into wholeness through the Word of God, as God did in my life. It's an organization that's a nonprofit organization that we will be taking kids into our organization and doing teaching components, doing support groups, doing outreach ministry with them, and really teaching them how to renew their mind.
Right.
Because
right.
We find out that in this world today that abuse help you have a one-track mind.
Right.
But Project Restoration will be helping them to learn to unlearn bad behavior and learn good behaviors.
Okay, we're going to be coming back to that. But right now we're going to get on to the testimony, and I'll just let you talk.
Okay. Well, how it all started for me was I'm a native New Yorker. I'm here in Charlotte, North Carolina. I've been here for a little bit over 10 years. And it's amazing how God can bring you from brokenness into wholeness. A lot of my ups and downs and my challenges has taken place in New York City, Utica, New York, that is. And my testimony is one of coming from child abuse. The type of child abuse that I had suffered from was neglect, physical and sexual abuse. This is an abuse that I later found out in life through educating myself and going through counseling. It's called a generation of curse. And a generation curse just extends from things that has happened in family members, and they have not seek the Lord. And so what happens is when you don't seek God and you birth kids into this world, what happens is you pass on that curse of situations and things that have happened to you. And unfortunately, I was just a product of an environment that things that has happened in my family, you know, from my dad and from my mom was passed down to me. The physical abuse part came from my dad. The sexual abuse came from my uncles. And it was a long journey that I thought that I would never, ever see the light of day. I can remember times when in our home that the physical abuse was just so great that I wasn't saved. And so I didn't know that there was a God. And I could just remember times that my dad would just get upset for no reason. And everything was either getting a beating with an iron cord, getting a beating with a piece of stick, anything that he could find his hands on to try to get me to cooperate off of something that sometimes things just didn't make sense. He just was an angry person. And I think that I know that the devil used him to try to destroy the purpose that God had on my life. I remember vividly a time when one of my teachers called from school and they was telling him that I had trouble just reading. And so he took that as me being bad in school, not understanding that certain kids can have certain learning disability.
Right.
And so from him taking that as me being bad, I remember for 2 days I had to sleep in a closet. You know, he told me to take my clothes off and I had to sleep in a closet and there was no food provided for me. And so, you know, at that time, me being a young child, you know, I didn't understand. My body was numb from sleeping on his shoes. I didn't eat. I remember when he did fall asleep that I snuck out of the closet and I went and ate some frozen food out of the freezer, you know, and came back into the closet. And the next day, you know, I was able to go to school. This happened on a Friday and I had to be in the closet on a Saturday and a Sunday and then go to school on a Monday. Well, from all the abuse that was happening in the home, I really couldn't relate to education. It was a challenge for me because one thing about going to school, and that is that you have to focus your mind on your schoolwork. And when it was time for me to try to concentrate on my work or taking a test, I couldn't do it. And that was because mentally, everything that was taking place in the home was coming back up at that time when I was in school. Right. And so for me to try to think about a problem, I couldn't. I would think about the screaming and the yelling that was going on in my house and me being tied up and beat, you know, butt naked, you know, to bedposts, you know, with iron cords and whips all over my body. And so those were the things that I would think about. And I just couldn't do my work. And the teachers, they didn't know what the problem was because, you know, back then you don't tell family secrets. And so as this went on for, you know, years, I would go to school.
How old were you when it first started?
I could say around 9 years old. Okay. Around 9 years old. I was first 9 years old when I first remember it starting because I was back in the third and fourth grade when I know that the challenges in school that I was having. Right. And so I would receive a lot of phone calls, you know, from school just saying that, you know, William is doing this and William is doing that. But what my dad didn't understand was back then that I had a learning disability. Okay. And with the learning disability, I had a trace of dyslexia. And so when I would try to read and understand stuff, I would turn stuff around. But my dad was not educated enough to understand that there could be a problem there. So right. He thought that the answer was everything that had to come about was through beating and punishment, not understanding that there was a condition there. And so, like I said, you know, I would go to school and I couldn't get it together. I mean, to think, you know, like I said, I would remember a scene of me being beat or a scene of me being thrown in a closet, a scene, the time when my dad threw me down the stairs. Those would be the things that would come up at the time of me trying to do my schoolwork. Well, this went on for years, and I did not tell anybody about the thing that went on in my life, and I kept everything inside. And with keeping everything inside, I realized that when I started turning the age into a teenager, I became an angry child. I noticed that I became a rebellious child against authority. And, you know, these days, I like to bring this up because I work in the field with children now. And one thing I love about God is that with me working in the field with these kids now, I try to help, you know, kids. I try to help kids and teachers through evangelizing, going through school system, going into the home, anywhere where kids at. I try to go in there and I try to let them know that the reason why some of our kids may be lacking in education, it could be some things that's going on in the home. And so this is what took place with me. And like I said, I became a class clown. You know, I did anything to try to avoid the pain. Well, as the pain grew more, I got introduced to drugs. And by me being introduced to drugs, this was another avenue that I thought that would help me escape the pain. I was led to marijuana, crack cocaine, and cocaine itself. I was on these drugs for about probably 6 to 7 years, just getting high and just not knowing where the next meal was going to come from. I say the next meal was going to come from because my dad was the type of person, his punishment was if I did something wrong, he took food from me. Okay, he took food from me and told me that I couldn't eat or I had to go to bed early. And I remember clearly an incident on one sunny day that I came home late from school, just 10 minutes. And when I came home, my dad said, why did you come home late? And I was telling him why I came home late. And he told me that I had to go to bed on a Friday afternoon and I couldn't get out of bed until Sunday. And then no food was served to me. And so, you know, what happened from there is when you try to stop a child from eating, what's happening now is addictions are happening and forming in his life. And that addiction was stealing. Okay, because I could not eat at home, I developed a stealing habit. I would go to stores. Instead of me going to school, I would go to store and steal meats. I would go steal candy. I would go steal bread. I would literally go steal lunch meat and bread and fix me sandwiches and eat before I go to school and hide the food under a porch and continue this for the rest of the week. And so what happened was I really believe that my uncle's found out that my dad was not feeding me. And so with them finding out that my dad was not feeding me, this is how the molestation happened in the home. Because now I had an uncle who used to ask me to come downstairs, and up north there was a two-story house. We had a five-bedroom house upstairs and a five-bedroom house downstairs. And so my dad and my mom lived upstairs with their kids, and my grandfather and the rest of his brothers and sisters lived downstairs. And so one of my uncles told me to come downstairs to watch the game with him. And as I was coming downstairs, he knew that my dad was not feeding me. And so he offered me some food.
How old were you at this point?
At this point, I was probably, let's say, 15 years old.
Okay.
15 years old. And so he offered me to come downstairs, and he told me that he would feed me. And so I told him that was fine. And so after I got done eating, turn around, he was asking me to do favors for him, you know, sexual favors, that was. And I told him that, no, that's something that I didn't want to get into. And so what happened was he told me that he would tell my dad that I was downstairs begging for food. Well, fear that my dad would believe that, you know, it turned around for me doing him a favor sexually. And that's how the sexual abuse, it happened probably, I can say, probably for about a year and a half. You know, a year and a half this took place. Again, my dad wouldn't feed me, you know, me being hungry, being confused, God not being in my life. You know, I felt that this was the only option that I had. And so now here it is that you got a kid who's angry, who's upset. You know, he's dealing with molestation. He's dealing with, you know, a learning disability, you know, just so much happening in my life. Well, what happened after that was I just could no longer take the abuse that was at the home. I finally came up with a plan, and I said that I was gonna run away and try to finish school living in the streets. And that's what I did. One Friday night, I waited till my dad, because he used to hang out in the street. I waited till he left, and I remember packing my bags and throwing them out the window. And I remember that day of me leaving, man, it was just so much freedom living off of me. I mean, pressure coming off of me. And at the time, somebody may say, you know, I sound crazy saying that it was freedom because now it's going to be living in the street versus home. Well, to me, it was freedom because I didn't have to no longer worry about being beat, being tied to a bed post. I didn't no longer have to worry about sleeping in closets, not being fed. And, you know, that's the way my mind was thinking. You know, so for a couple of days, I lived in the streets of New York, and my food became the garbage can. You know, I would find food in the garbage that people had left behind, and I would eat it. And I would stay sleeping in different parks and different friends' house. I would come up with an excuse that my mom wasn't home. And so different parents at that time wasn't really checking, and they would let me stay there. And so I would stay there and get up from school, but still I just couldn't concentrate in school at all. You know, just with so much going on. The drug in my life, the drug addiction became heavy, because now with me being away from school, my cocaine habit and crack habit had came great. I would now go and steal clothes, because this was the other thing that my dad did, and that was keep me from receiving rewards. I guess his thing was that if I didn't do good or if he felt that I was bad, he wouldn't buy me school clothes. So I had developed a habit of stealing my own clothes. I really became a professional thief. What I started doing was taking orders in school. People who needed clothes, I would tell them, give me a list of what they need, and I would go to the store and steal these things for them, you know, to gain money, to get food, you know, anything that I can do, you know, it was survival for me. That's the way I look at it. It was me surviving. You know, I didn't care how people judged me. A lot of people knew I was eating out the garbage. People knew that I was stealing, you know, out of the stores. But at that time, that didn't mean anything to me. It just, I didn't want to go back home.
Right.
And so with all that happening, I finally found a friend in school who allowed me to stay with him. And his parents was a Christian. It was a Christian. And one of the things they told me was that I had to go to church, which wasn't a problem for me because I was going to church when I was home. But again, punishment for my dad was when things didn't go right or he felt that I was out of order, he would stop me from going to church and tell me I couldn't go to church. And so, you know, God wasn't in me, but church was in me, meaning that I was familiar with going to church and preaching. I was familiar with that. And so, you know, I said, okay, you know, I'll go to church. And, you know, with me going to church, you know, I really didn't get anything out of the sermon because I wasn't at that time going for the purpose of Christ. I was just going for a duty because this is what I was told to do. And again, I needed somewhere to stay. Well, what happened out of that was as I was sitting in church, I would notice that sometimes the preacher would talk about stuff that happened in my home. And I was like, wow. And sometimes I would be sad, you know.
What do you mean?
Well, he would talk about stuff like not abusing children, how Jesus loved us and everything that happened to us, you know, that may take place in our homes or our community. We have one source that even if our mother and father fail us, we have one source, and that was, you know, Jesus Christ. And at the time I was hearing him, but not hearing him because I was angry. You know, I was still angry. I was upset, you know, with God, you know, because I was questioning myself and say, well, if God is real, why would he let this happen to me?
Right.
And so, you know, so I was sitting in church and so church really, after a while, it became a place of me just playing around. I really didn't take it serious at all. And, you know, I would come and after a while, some of the people at my church, they found out about my history. And when they found out about my history, I wasn't really received. I guess I was okay until some people found out that I was stealing and eating out the garbage and this and that. And then the church was kind of at a standoff, you know, with me, you know. But I still went anyways because something was prompting me at that time to go, which later I find out was God and His Holy Spirit,
right.
You know. But at the time I didn't know what it was. I just knew that I needed to be there. So there would be sometimes, man, I'll be drunk and I'll be high, just leaving a club probably like 5 o'clock in the morning, and church would be starting at 9 o'clock, man, and I just had to get there. So I'd be sitting in the back high and, you know, drunk, sitting, you know, just sitting back there because I wanted to go there. Again, it was a duty, and I had to go in order to stay with my friends. And so it just became a duty and a habit for me. But something about it, I started liking it. I really started liking it. Well, what happened was, man, this addiction of drugs and alcohol was getting the best of me. And, I mean, my life was going nowhere fast. I mean, now here it is that I was getting ready to graduate from school. And my teachers was telling me that there was a possibility that I wouldn't graduate because my credits was low because I missed a lot of class. So I asked the teachers, what can I do? They told me that I need to double up. Well, make a long story short, I started praying. I heard about praying. You know, and I started praying. I was like, Lord, you know, I don't want to go to school for another year. And so, you know, make a long story short, the teachers told me that I could double up. And I wind up doubling up and graduating. But what's funny was before I graduated, I wind up getting myself in trouble. And with myself getting in trouble stealing out of a store, I had to go to court. And because I was in school, I started doing weekends. And what that simply was I could go to school Monday through Friday, but Friday at 6 o'clock, I would have to turn myself in and go to jail from Friday until Sunday night and be released to go to school. And one of the deals was when I graduated, I had to finish my time, which was 6 months in jail, you know? And so I wind up finishing my time, you know, in jail, the 6 months. I got done with everything. At this time, I met a young lady and, you know, we had a son. And what happened was my stealing habit just increased because, again, I was dealing with addictions and not knowing how to really work, didn't have no work history behind me. All I had was street smarts. And so I would continue to steal out stores, steal clothes, steal food, do anything I can do. Well, one day I decided to go inside the mall with me and some of my friends back in 87. And we stole $30,000 worth of athletic gear.
Oof.
And
did you have a truck?
Well, we had a couple of vehicles. we had a couple of vehicles. I mean, when you're dealing with addiction, man, I mean, it's funny because God give us gifts and talents, and the devil knows that.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I had a mastermind of just thinking of stuff, you know, when I was out there, not knowing that God was going to use me, you know, for his glory.
Right.
But right now the devil was, you know, taking his turn, just using me for his puppet, you know. And so I became a mastermind of just knowing how to go in the store and steal $30,000 worth of athletic gear. And so, you know, we got away with the stuff, and make a long story short, I was a guy who always liked to dress. You know, I stayed clean because I would steal my stuff.
You still dress, brother.
You know, so what happened was one day at a basketball game, it was a popular basketball game in New York with these two teams, and I came there clean. And this is when Feli first came out.
Yeah.
And, you know, I wore the whole Feli suit, and everybody came up to me like, man, I never seen that brand. You know, the store didn't even let the stuff out in the racks yet. You know, and so what happened was, man, I came there dressed real clean, man, and everybody was coming up to me and saying, man, you look nice and this and that. And this one guy was asking me questions. And you know, make a long story short, find out later that his sister was dating a state trooper. And I didn't know that there was a big investigation that they was wondering who broke into the store. Make a long story short, man, one day I get a knock at my door, and they tell me that they needed me to come down to the station. I come down to the station because they ain't tell me what it was for. So I come down to the station, man, and wind up getting arrested. You know, make a long story short, man, I wind up had to serve a year and a half in jail. And so with me serving a year and a half in jail, by this time I had a son. You know, I had a son from the lady that I was seeing. And what happened was I went to jail, and this is something I'll never forget because it took me 20 years to forget about this. I went to jail. I had a son. And I remember on Christmas Day, I learned to pray. One day when you were in jail, you see God more. You see God more. So I became a praying man, you know, just praying. I didn't want to be there. You know, and so I would pray, I would fast, I would remember everything. So it was a purpose while I was in church,
right,
you know, because even though I wasn't paying attention, the word went in me,
right,
you know. And so I would remember some of the stuff that the pastor said to do.
Right.
And so, you know, I would pray in jail and, you know, and fast and say, Lord, oh, I don't want to be here. You know, please let me out of here. I don't want to be here for Christmas. And man, I could remember, man, clear this day that, you know, I thought my prayers was answered because the CO said, open up gate 7. I said, man, I'm getting ready to get out.
Right.
And so as I got out, man, it's funny because people say, do God speak to you? Well, at this time, this is when God started dealing with me, because as they opened up my cell, I clearly heard a voice saying, you're not getting out. Your son died. So first I said, now this is just me talking. This, you know, this is just me. So I was walking down the hallway. I felt God was trying to give me peace, you know, already warned me. And so as I got down, I saw my pastor, you know, and as I was sitting down with him, he said, I got some news to tell you. And before he gave me the news, I told him what it was. I said, my son died, right? And he said, yeah, how did you know? I never answered him. And, you know, I told him how I knew. And, you know, I became really depressed. You know, I had to go back. They did allow me to come out to go see, you know, the funeral for my son, but I had to go back and serve my time, man. And it was a mental battle, man. Suicidal thoughts came up to me, man, just wanting to end my life, because now you're talking about a kid who's been abused, who's been molested, man, who stole out stores, ate out the garbage, and now the son died. So it was just stuff on top of stuff just happening in my life. And so, you know, man, sitting in jail, I just thought that, you know, that there was nothing else left for me. And so, you know, I really wanted to commit murder, I mean, by hanging myself. And I don't know, just something in me, every time I would try to do it, God just wouldn't let me. You know, I would just kept hearing a voice saying, I love you. At this time, I didn't really understand God, but I would hear a voice saying that I love you. And so what happened was I finally served my time in jail, but my drug habit was still there. I was still on, you know, because of all the pain that I went through, I still never sat down with somebody and shared what I've been through. And so,
yeah, were you able to feed your drug habit while you were in jail?
No. When I was in jail, it's funny because when I was in jail, I became close to God, and I liked it. You know, I was, they always say jail ministry. When somebody go to jail,
right, yeah,
they know how to find Christ,
right.
You know? And so I would preach to the guys going up and down, you know, and certain guys would tell me, what am I doing here? You know, at this time, this is when I would hear this word, you got a call on your life. And I didn't know what that means. And certain people in jail say, you don't belong here. You got a call on your life. And I was like, what do they mean by that? And they say, you're supposed to be a preacher. And I was like, okay, well, I don't understand what that means, you know. And so, you know, it was just hearsay to me. And so, you know, got out of jail, you know, went back to the church, you know, that I was going every now and then, and found out that they wasn't really receiving me, you know, because they knew that I was in jail.
Right.
And so, you know, I wind up just leaving church and really getting high and, you know, really being on drugs real bad. I mean, and it came to a point that I no longer wanted to be on drugs, but bondage will keep you doing something crazy, knowing that it's not right for you. It's almost like if this was crack cocaine sitting here on this table, and you told me poison was mixed with that, what people don't understand about a drug addict, they would do it because of the bondage.
Right.
Okay, even though they know it could kill them. And so I would get high, and I would pray at the same time that I would get high. Yeah. I mean, I would pray. I was like, Lord, you know, I don't want to do this. Take the taste away from me. And there would be times that I would pray, and the habits would leave. You know, I wouldn't want to get high that day. And so, you know, I was like, wow, okay, this works. So I'll be with my friends. And so they'll be passing, you know, we rolling up marijuana. They'll be passing it around. And they'll be like, do you want some? And I'm like, nah, I'm good. And they'll be like, you know, why are you saying you're good? And I was just like, I'm good. I didn't want it. And, you know, so I started saying, wow, this prayer stuff really works. And so the stealing, I remember even the stealing. It was now, I know God was dealing with me. Now I know, I learned this now that God was dealing with me, because now, you know, I would, again, bondage. I know stealing could get me going back to jail, but this was all I knew.
Right.
And so I would be driving to the mall and praying at the same time. You know, Lord, I know I shouldn't be doing this.
Right.
I'm almost asking God, don't let me get caught.
Right,
you
right,
know,
right.
Crazy.
Right.
But bondage would get you to do anything. And so as I'm driving, I'm praying, Lord, please don't let me get caught. And it would make a long story short, man. There was times that I would pray, man, and then the desires would just leave me. And I was like, wow, you know. And then my friends was like, you know, are you going to steal? And I was like, nah, I'm good today, man. I'll go out. We was hanging in the street. I said, I'll go out with the old clothes that I got. I don't need nothing new. And so, you know, I'll be standing in the clubs, man, and, you know, talking to God now. Now I had a habit of talking to God. So I'll be in the clubs, man, just looking in the clubs and be like, man, you know, what am I doing here? And so, you know, I'd be a little tipsy off of the drink. And by the time I got done talking to God, you know, the highness will leave me. And it'll be about 12 o'clock. And I tell my boys, I'm leaving. I'm going home. And they're like, you going home? I said, yeah, I'm going home. You know, and so after, I said, you know, I need to get my life right. I need to seriously get my life right. And so what I did then was I just tried to, you know, go and find jobs, you know, just find jobs. And so, you know, I got turned down several times because they would find out that I had a criminal background record. And so, you know, I would get different labor jobs. And, you know, the devil is real tricky, because I finally found a good job that kind of blew my mind. You know, the affirmative action came, and at some construction site, they didn't have minorities.
Mm-hmm.
And so they had passed a rule that they needed minorities on a job. So I was one of them that they hired. Man, I was making about $21.95 an hour being 19 years old.
Wow.
But my habit was still there.
Yeah.
So that only intensified, you know.
There's more to spend on drugs.
It's more to spend on drugs. And so, and it's so funny to show you what addiction do to you. But I tell you, man, even sitting up here talking with you now, man, I really just thank God, because I'm thinking about these addictions, because one would say, you know, bondage is real, because I would get paid, man. I would have about $900 in my pocket, get paid every week from construction. Man, I would still go in the mall and steal with $900 in my pocket.
Right.
It was an addiction.
Yeah, that's
in
bondage.
Bondage. You know, I got money,
right.
You know,
right.
But this was a pattern of mine. This is
right.
What I just learned to do.
Right.
And so, you know, I would still go steal and use the money to get the drugs.
Okay.
You know, and so, I remember one time I got an income tax check, man, that was about $3,200. And I spent that whole income tax in one night on crack cocaine.
Whoa.
Yeah, on crack cocaine, $3,200 that night, man. And You know, so again, man, I knew that my life wasn't going anywhere fast, man. And so, you know, again, I knew to pray. Everything was prayer. So I knew to pray, you know, like, Lord, I need to quit this addiction. The taste needs to just come out of my mouth. And I tell you, man, this is no joke. This is how I know that God is real, because I can say with the addictions that I had, the church, you know, was not part of my delivery. My delivering came straight from prayer in the crack house, in the car getting high, in the mall stealing. That's right. Where my deliverance came from prayer. And so, you know, I would just pray, Lord, I need this to come to an end. And so, you know, little by little, I no longer had the taste for crack cocaine. Little by little, I no longer had the taste for sniffing cocaine. I no longer had the taste for marijuana. I no longer had the taste for alcohol. And so I was like, wow, you know, wow, I'm a different person. And so stealing still was part of me. Stealing was still part of me. I was one hard addiction to get rid of. But thanks be to God, you know, he had delivered me. And so, you know, now by this time, I'm trying to live right and, you know, be on the up and up. And I'm going to tell you how I came to Charlotte, North Carolina, because one of my friends moved down here and he was like, man, you probably just need to leave New York, man, and just start all over again. And I felt that I needed to do the same thing. And so when I first got, it's funny how God know where you're supposed to be. And so he would use what you like at that time. You know, I love rap. Okay. And so at that time in New York, we had Puff Daddy. In California, they had Suge Knight, and in Atlanta, they had Jermaine Dupri. So we said in Charlotte, they don't have no producer here. So me and my friend thought we'll be the first ones to come down here to do that. Right. So God knew what to do to get me down here. So we wound up coming down here. He came down here first. I helped him move. And, you know, he came down here to go to video school to get everything set up. You know, make a long story short, I finally came down here. And it was funny because the minute I moved down here, me and him never connect. We never connect. I never saw him again. And I couldn't believe it. I said, wow, what do I do now? Watch how the devil is real tricky. Next thing you know, I'm working in a hotel. Got me a job. And I'm legit working in a job. And I'm checking out some customers. And I look up and I see two of my friends from New York, the ones who used to sell drugs. Who used to sell drugs. So what happened was... you know, I'm looking at them and they ask me how I'm doing. I told them I'm doing all right. And a part that I forgot to tell you is the year before I left Utica, New York was back in 95. I did quit sniffing cocaine and smoking crack cocaine, but now I try to become a drug dealer. And, you know, and so I was out there selling drugs, man, and I mean, nothing would go right for me, you know, trying to sell drugs out there, man. I got robbed. People would steal from me. I would give people, I would now give crackhead stuff. And they're like, this is $20. I was like, yeah, you know, I didn't know no better, man. And so even that didn't work.
You weren't a good drug dealer.
No, I wasn't a good drug dealer at all. I was not. God was making
sure.
That's a good thing. Yeah, yeah. God, as I see now, God was making sure that was never going to become a profession, you know, because he knew I was determined. So he knew I was never going to be a Nino Brown, you know, so he knew that. So, you know, I finally left. Like I said, I left in 95 Utica, New York, and I just couldn't believe it, because here it is. Some of my friends from Brooklyn was sitting right there in a hotel and they was asking me how I was doing. And so I met up with them. One thing I thank God through the power of prayer, I met up with them and I got with them, but I never got back into selling drugs when I was in Charlotte, North Carolina. I never got back into selling drugs. And I got down here in 97. Okay. And so what I can say is God had delivered me from the stealing. He had delivered me from the alcohol, the drug selling. He delivered me from everything in Utica, New York. So when I came down here, it was just now me coming down here. Now I was introduced to one other habit that was getting ready to form, and it was called balling. Okay. Balling, you know, because I already dressed nice, it was easy for me to connect with ballers.
Now,
you know,
explain what you mean by that.
Well, balling was a form of being basically a big shot, having big bucks, dressing nice, and getting all the women.
Okay.
And so, you know, because I already dressed nice, half of my stuff was already stolen. And so because I already dressed nice and I had stuff that ballers was wearing $400 suits and wearing gaiters, I had that stuff already. So it was easy for me to just adapt with them.
Right.
And so, you know, I would hang out with different cliques and, you know, there was this club called Adams Mart back in 97. And so, you know, we would go down there and just, you know, chill out and have our gaiters on and our suits and have women sitting at the table, man. But it's funny because everything you think that you want in life, this is what I'm coming to the conclusion. Everything that I thought that I needed to escape the abuse, because everything that I've been through was to escape the abuse. Because had I could have sat down and talked to a minister or a preacher at that time and tell them what I've been through, I don't think I would have went through the stuff. But when you're trying to hide and camouflage the stuff that you've been through, you get connected to these habits,
right,
to try to hide the pain.
Right.
And so everything that I've been through, it was because I didn't want to tell anybody what I, you know, come through. And so I try to hide it through drugs, alcohol, even balling. And so, you know, I would, funny, because I would have women come to my house, and this is when I know God was really calling me into the ministry. I would have women come to my house at 2 o'clock in the morning, you know, thinking things was going to go on.
Right.
And I would preach to them. I didn't understand where this was coming from.
Right, right.
You know, they would come to my house and I would see their souls. It's like God would open up their hearts and let me see the sadness in them. And so, you know, I would sit there and I'd be like, listen, I don't want to do this. And they'd be like, huh? And I was like, nah, you know, I don't want to do this. And I was like, do you got kids? And they was like, yeah, I have kids. And I was like, listen, you should be home with your kids. Man, it's 3:30 in the morning. And, you know, let's just not, you know, get into anything. You know, we didn't do anything. We could repent. They was like, repent. And I was like, are you saved? And they was like, saved? You know, so I would pull out my Bible, you know, and start telling them about God. They would be crying, I would be crying, then they would get saved.
Wow.
You know, and so I knew something was happening.
Yeah.
Just didn't know what. I knew something was happening because this became a habit. And so after I said, you know, I need to find me a church. And so what happened was, at that time, I found probably about 3 churches at that time, and I didn't know which one I wanted to go to. So Well, let's back up. Before I got into church, I thought that I got my life cleaned up. And so I said to myself, well, you know, I got my life cleaned up and I don't do these things anymore. So, you know, I could get married, you know. And so I saw the wife. You know, I know now that the Bible said it, but I didn't know then. So I was on the right track.
Right.
I just wasn't cleaned up yet,
right,
you know. And so wind up getting married. This is funny because I met my wife and we had got married. I was married twice since I've been down here, and met my wife and we got married. We dated for about 3 months. We dated about 2 months and we got married the 3rd month, you know, in justice of peace.
Right.
You know, I said I had this philosophy.
Quick.
Yeah, it was quick. You know, again, another addiction coming
right
in. That's all it was, another addiction.
Right.
And so next thing you know, got married. I mean, that marriage didn't go right. Found out that you could know the word of God,
mm-hmm,
to get married. Okay, those are the ingredients, but you got to know the substance and everything to put in that marriage to make it work. Now, that I didn't know.
Right.
All
right.
I saw was a dysfunctional marriage in my own home. So some of that stuff was displayed, you know,
right,
me being
right,
angry and upset and, you know, always complaining and just wasn't satisfied.
Right.
You know, I never got back on drugs. Every time pressure came, I never got. So I know God is real because I never resorted back to drugs and alcohol. I never resorted back to that stuff, but just couldn't make the marriage work. So we wound up splitting up in 6 months, and the divorce came up out of that. And, you know, by now my heart was really broken. And I was like, listen, God finally got me. He had finally broke me, you know, through broken love. And so I said, I need to really get into church and I really need to surrender to God. And so at this time I was going to 3 different churches in Charlotte. And at the same time I was going through my divorce, and somebody referred me to a pastor who was going to University Park. And at this time he was a counselor. His name was Michael Henderson.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, they told me to go talk to this man. He hears from God. And so I goes in and we talk, and he asked me what happened. And I told him what happened in the marriage and who was going back and forth. He was asking me questions. And then he said, young man, you have a call on your life. And so now I'm remembering probably about 15 years ago, I heard this.
Right.
And so I was like, you know, sir, what do that mean? You know, now I'm asking questions. And he was like, well, what that means is God has called you to be a minister, to preach the gospel. And I was like, oh, okay. And so I kept his card. He gave me his card. I kept it in my pocket. And, you know, me and my ex-wife never got back together. It finally went to divorce. So I wind up going to one church. It wasn't a church that he was going to. I was going to another small church. And I kept his card. For some reason, I was compelled not to throw his card away. So I kept his card in my pocket. And I mean, now I think my addiction became now women. You know, me now just getting in and out of relationships, relationship, man, trying to fill that void is what right. I realized, trying to fill that void. And so finally, man, after many relationships, man, this is how God called me, and I'll never forget this. I was dating this girl for about 2 years, and it was just up and down and rocky, and I lost 9 jobs in 1 year. Wow. And so me losing 9 jobs in 1 year, man, I knew God was trying to call me, but I was just being hard-headed. Man, this is something that I'll never forget. I'm laying in the bed, and I used to watch Creflo Dollar on TV. Mm-hmm. And so I stopped watching him for a while because I was in sin, and I just felt wrong watching him. But one day, I was led to turn the TV on. And as I turned the TV on, the TV show came on, and he was like, "You, laying in that bed. The reason why you lost 9 jobs in 1 year is because you won't answer the call of God on your life. Now, you need to get up out of that bed, and you need to answer the call of God." My mouth was hung open, and I couldn't even speak. You know, I was trying to get the person to come listen to this, but I think God didn't even want her to hear. He wanted me to hear. So, you know, I got up out of her bed. She was getting dressed for work, and I said, "Listen, I need to go home." You know, I went home. I got on my knees, you know, and I prayed. I called her at work, and I said, "Listen, I'm going to give you your keys back. Give me my keys back to my apartment. You can come get your stuff. I'm going to get my stuff. And I got to break this off. I got to really serve God." And so this happened in 99. This happened in 99. I was serious about serving God, just getting ready to be 2000 in December. And so as I made that decision to really, really, really serve God and give my all, I went on a 40-day fast to try to now see where am I supposed to go, right. What church God wanted me to go. In between that 40-day fast, what happened was I got a call one night, and the call was from my mom, and she said, "Your dad passed away." And this was hard for me because when I first moved to Charlotte, even though all the abuse that I've been through, I still, one thing about children, even though they go through abuse and neglect at their home, they still kind of connected to their parents, more their dad, you know. And so I was still hoping and praying one day that me and him had a relationship. But one day we was on the phone, and he kept telling me he was going to call me, and he would never call me. And so, you know, I said, "Well, I'm not going to call him either." So it was a year went by, and I never called him. And I said, "Well, he don't call me, I don't call him." Well, I mean, I regret it to this day because in that year, right after that year, I get the phone call that he passed away. Wow. Now, I was brokenhearted because I didn't hear from him in one whole year. Yeah. And so I had to drive to, you know, back up north, you know, and, you know, I was praying to God. And it's like, "I'm not going to let this move me and shake me. I'm still serve you. You know, I don't know what's going on right now." And so after I came back from, you know, the funeral, I still stayed on my 40-day fast. Even me going up to New York, and you know how funerals is full of food, you know, I still stayed on my fast. I came back to Charlotte, North Carolina, and I was still on my fast. Well, I was working in a job with kids at this time. I was working in a group home. And so I was fasting, and there was a guy who was my supervisor, and he said, "What church you go to?" So I was telling him, and so he said, "Well, there's a guy who's getting ready to start his own church." And I said, "What's his name?" And he said, "Michael Henderson." And I said, "Really?" And so I took my wallet out, and I said, "This is the guy?" And he said, "Yeah, I had that card for 2 years in my wallet, for 2 years. Wow. So I pulled out the card, and he said, "Yeah, this is him right here." So I thought God gave me my answer, you know. So he said he's starting a church called New Beginnings, you know. Right. So that's amazing right there, New Beginnings. Right. And so, you know, I went to the church, you know. At this time, he was sharing church with another church. And so I went there on a Sunday, and I saw him, and I said, "Yeah, it's the same guy." And so I kept going and going. I mean, I was so on fire for God now. I mean, and it's funny because how I became on fire from God and knowing the word of God, it wasn't the church. Right. It was my own personal spending time with God, you know, in my home, because I didn't trust church. Right. Because I know that the church I go to, I say, okay, they're accepting me now in the nice suits, you know. Right. But if I take this suit off and the mask off and tell them my story, then how are they going to accept me? And so I kept this a secret. Well, as I got to New Beginnings, I still didn't share my story. Here I am 30. I was 32 at that time, and nobody never knew about the molestation. I never told anybody about none of my drug addiction, anything. It's been a secret ever since. And so, you know, finally God was telling me I could trust him. And so I made an appointment with the pastor, and I went to his office, and I shared with him everything that I've been through, you know, as a child. And I mean, I was so broken. You know, and he was like, you know, after I got done talking to him, it was, I mean, I went through so much. It was supposed to be an hour session. It was 2 hours. He yeah. met with me, and he was like, young man, he did remember me. He was like, young man, the devil's been trying to kill you ever since you've been born. And he was like, know that God got a call on your life. But what God used him for was to let me understand why I went through what I went through. First, the first thing he wanted me to know was God did not allow this, okay? Because that's what my mind was thinking, right, that God allowed this. But he was like, God did not allow this. God loves you. Now, that was difficult for me to understand because, you know, that verse in the Bible where your father give you, you know, a stone right. or whatever.
A serpent.
Well, that was true to me.
Right.
You know, if you asked me, I was like, yeah, my dad would give me that. So I couldn't understand God's love. And so he would say, God, you know, God loves you. And, you know, you need to know that you got a call on your life and God want to restore you. And he want to bring you back into the same area working with children, you know, where children could relate to you because of what you've been through, you know. And so New Beginnings became a place of, when I got to New Beginnings, what God needed to do at New Beginnings was, even though I was delivered from a lot of my addictions, the behaviors is now what God was going to deliver me from. Because mm-hmm. addiction brings on behavior, mm-hmm. anger, bitterness, resentment, all that type of stuff in you, you know, rage. And so I needed to be delivered from that. And so I got to New Beginnings. And as I got to New Beginnings, I went to counseling with my pastor for several years, counseling, reading books, telling me, he was telling me different books to read, you know, books on emotional, how to be whole, how to heal through the word of God,
yeah.
give me different scriptures to read, you know. And so I would read this stuff and, you know, stuff would just come alive to me. I had a more understanding of why I went through what I went through.
Right.
And so that's the place that I am now at New Beginnings. I got called into the ministry in 2000. After I allowed God to clean myself up, he told me I had to call on my life to be a minister. I went through the minister class. And from there on, that's my
yeah.
story.
I actually know your pastor. I've had him on the show before, and I'm going to try to get him back on again. And and that is a great story. That is a powerful, awesome testimony.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so glad you were able to come in and share that. But that also led you into the nonprofit that you started. So could you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, the nonprofit Project Restoration, how that came about was just me now, after being cleaned up, you know, I've been working for a lot of agencies dealing with children. I was asking God, what is it that he would like for me to do? And God put on my heart to start a nonprofit organization dealing with children who has been abused, mm-hmm. who's been victim of abuse. And what Project Restoration is going to come into is trying to help these kids not to go through the things that I had to go through to try to get rid of the pain and the hurt,
right.
and try to grab the children and the teenagers at a young age before they become a young adult to try to tackle some of these problems, give them understanding of what is abuse, why people abuse, and the most important thing is to help them to renew their minds.
Right.
You know, from everything that they saw, because when you go through abuse, there's dysfunction.
Right.
And so basically tackle the dysfunction that's been led from abuse.
Right. This may sound weird, but we're actually coming to the end of the show. How can people get in contact with you?
Well, people could get in contact with me. They could reach me at P.O. Box 690248, Charlotte, North Carolina, 28227. My phone number is 704-840-7894. And then they could reach me at projectrestorationinc.us.
Okay. Thank you for being on the show, William Blackshear. It has been an honor. And that will end this episode of Giving an Answer. Be sure to join me again next time. And until then, goodbye and God bless.